being able to help clients gave us a welcome relief from the constant barrage of news stories. It also helped me not feel as helpless. Being in the trenches with clients was a way to feel productive. I found that clients with a loved one, usually a parent or partner, with a personality disorder, most notably narcissistic personality disorder, were more impacted than others. Much of this work done with these individuals helps them to acknowledge the gaslighting involved in their relationship with their loved one, to identify that they are not crazy and do have sound and intact judgment regarding their impaired loved one, to acknowledge the limitations of their loved one, and to develop healthy coping strategies to cope with their loved one's erratic mood changes, blaming, and lying. One woman, Claire, all names and clinical situations have been changed and placed in quotation marks where they first appear, a mother of a young child with special needs and a husband with narcissistic traits, had been referred to me by her husband because he felt that she was going crazy and needed professional help. Part of our work together was to help her understand the legitimacy of her husband's assessment, continue to work on her anxiety, which had been triggered by this dynamic, and to set healthier boundaries with her husband. Claire was very educated, politically liberal, and struggled with the impact of Trump's being elected. Her anxiety symptoms were exacerbated during the post-election and post-inauguration period. Her treatment focused on normalizing her feelings and encouraging her to establish control by making a difference in the ways she could. For her, this entailed volunteering, expressing appreciation to her child's teachers and other related professionals, and by calling her local congressional representatives. Another woman, Ida, was in her early 20s and an undergraduate student in her junior year. Ida was gifted and also extremely sensitive and inquisitive. She had struggled in therapy to make sense of her relationship with her father, who had narcissistic traits. I remember her stating after the election, "I feel like we are all in an emotionally abusive relationship with our president." She struggled with increased anxiety as well, and our work was to help ground her in what she could and could not control. She participated in several protest marches, which helped her feel less helpless. However, she struggled with minimizing her social media consumption and would often come into sessions feeling overwhelmed by the latest news. Working in a very progressive area without one Trump supporter as a client enabled me to be honest with my clients that I was experiencing similar feelings and that many of these feelings were universal to progressives post-election. I like to think that my clients appreciated my honesty and my ability to see a very human side to their therapist. However, many times the role of the therapist involves helping clients feel more hopeful and confident in their lives. This task proved to be quite difficult, as we therapists were left with similar feelings of helplessness and, perhaps due to our professional training, more concern given the characterological issues we saw in Trump's behavior and personality.
Jennifer Contarino Panning, psychology doctor, is a licensed clinical psychologist and owner of Mindful Psychology Associates, a small group practice in Evanston, Illinois. She received her doctorate in clinical psychology from the Chicago School of Professional Psychology in 2003 and completed training at Northern Illinois University and Northwestern University. Panning opened her private practice in 2004 and now has three psychologists and a postdoctoral fellow on staff. She specializes in the treatment of mood disorders, eating disorders, college student mental health, stress, and trauma using an integrative approach of cognitive behavioral therapy, mindfulness, and dialectical behavioral therapy, and is also trained in clinical hypnosis. In relationship with an abusive president. Harper West, MA, LLP. As Amelia describes her husband's behavior in my therapy office, it immediately strikes me as emotionally abusive, although she acts as if his behavior were completely normal. Justin can be harshly critical, calling her a fat loser and her home-cooked meals a disaster. If she asks even reasonable questions, he lashes out at her. You're always so negative and critical. If she states a fact he disagrees with, he accuses her of making up fake stories. Despite Justin's family and financial security, he is joyless and scowls much of the time. Amelia is mystified how the most minor disagreements seem to escalate into major arguments. I ask if Justin can apologize or admit fault. Oh, never, she says. He's very stubborn. It's always my fault. I call him Justifying Justin. Their most recent argument began when she asked if he had paid a bill. He became enraged and said he had paid it. She later learned that he had not paid the bill, but he refused to apologize for the lie, the ensuing argument, or his excessive anger. Justin has lied so frequently that Amelia has become concerned she is losing her mind or has a poor memory, a belief aided by the fact that Justin accuses her of these faults. He insists that she forget his mistakes, but he brings up her mistakes repeatedly during arguments. She describes Justin as being successful at business, very decisive, and a strong leader. She hesitates to confront him because she has learned that it leads to arguments escalating with no resolution. She is always the one to compromise. Amelia reports high levels of anxiety and fears Justin's unpredictable reactions. This couple is a composite of many cases where the pattern of abuse ranges from subtle to glaring. Not coincidentally, this couple is an analogy for the current relationship between America and a psychologically unstable, emotionally abusive president. Domestic abusers and President Donald Trump share common personality traits because they share common human drives, emotions, and reactions. These characteristics negatively impact relationships, whether interpersonal or with an entire country, and they must be addressed for the health of those being harmed. Renaming narcissists. Some mental health professionals have associated Trump with a variety of diagnoses, such as narcissistic personality disorder, antisocial personality disorder, paranoid personality disorder, delusional disorder, malignant narcissist, and some form of dementia. Some of these labels come from the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, which numerous authors have identified as an unscientific, arbitrary categorization system that overcomplicates and falsely medicalizes emotional and behavioral problems. To avoid this categorization system and to simplify and focus on the character flaw that is at the core of these personalities, I will call these types of people other blamers. The cause of their behaviors is low self-worth, which leads them to have poor shame tolerance. They learned in childhood to manage feelings of inadequacy by adopting unhealthy coping mechanisms to forestall or avoid shaming experiences. Poor shame tolerance causes behaviors associated with the just mentioned DSM disorders, including vindictive anger, lack of insight and accountability, dishonesty, impulsivity, entitlement, paranoia, lack of remorse and empathy, self-importance, and attention-seeking. Trump is an extreme example, but subclinical versions of this behavior exist in millions of people, including domestic abusers. It may be difficult to discern the low self-worth of other blamers because they often adopt an aggressive, dominating persona to achieve emotional self-protection. They rarely admit feelings of inadequacy because they believe this would make them vulnerable to the same abuse and control they are perpetrating. As a psychotherapist, I see the victims of other blamers in my office every day. Less severe other blamers cause high conflict or estranged relationships. More severe cases can engage in emotional and physical abuse of partners and children, criminal behavior, and addictive behaviors. I have often said we should not be diagnosing those who come into therapy, but rather those who caused them to come to therapy. Despite their toxic behavior, other blamers rarely voluntarily agree to therapy because of their aversion to the shaming experience of self-awareness and accountability. Yet, they are quite often the subject of the therapy of others. Certainly, other blamers are aided to some degree by the deferential behaviors of individuals who employ two other types of shame management strategies, self-blaming and blame avoidance. Other blamers instinctively seek out those willing to be controlled, manipulated, or intimidated. This sets up relationships with submissive people who will not challenge, correct, or blame them. Dictators throughout history have surrounded themselves with a coterie of family members and sycophants who avoid questioning the leader for fear of his angry retribution. For the sake of clarity, this article will refer to abusers as males, but both genders can be other blamers and abusers. Causes of other blamer behavior. As children, other blamers were likely exposed to developmental or attachment trauma, such as abusive, shaming, rejecting, or neglectful parenting. Parents who are substance abusers or psychologically troubled often under focus on a child's needs. Parents may have exhibited narcissistic or other blaming behaviors that the child models. Another possible cause is parents who were permissive or conflict-avoiding and did not hold the child accountable. Parents who over-focus on achievement or behavioral compliance can also encourage a fear of failure that may bring on other blaming tendencies. These experiences can cause children to feel unloved, unprotected, and inadequate. They may struggle to experience empathy for others and may develop an unhealthy hypersensitivity and overreaction to shaming experiences. While other blaming as a shame management strategy may be adaptive in childhood, it causes difficulties for adult relationships at all levels, from presidential to personal. Emotional reactivity with fear, shame, and anger. In all humans, survival fear overwhelms the deliberative, logical functioning of the cognitive brain. Children exposed to trauma continually rehearse fight-or-flight reactions so that their brains become habituated to and easily hijacked by survival emotions. Chronic exposure to the fear response leads to anxiety-based behaviors such as impulsivity, hyperactivity, irrationality, volatility, impetuousness, poor frustration tolerance, and poor concentration, all of which Trump exhibits on a daily basis. Trump's incoherent gibberish may be a sign of his fearful, reactive emotional state. He cannot calm his brain enough even to form a complete sentence. One must be calm to be mindful of one's thoughts, feelings, and experiences, and to gain self-awareness. Although they are adept at hiding it, other blamers know a lot about fear. They spend their lives in an emotional survival panic, in terror of being judged and found unworthy. They are in a mad scramble to find some way to feel better about themselves, or at least to protect themselves from feeling additional shame. That shame can lead to protective anger, as recognized in the aphorism, "Anger is shame's bodyguard." For extreme other blamers, elevated fight-or-flight reactivity can lead to shame-driven rage and abusive violence. Domestic violence incidents are usually triggered when the abuser feels challenged, demeaned, or rejected by the partner. Abusers fail to learn to tolerate shame in healthy ways, so even minor or perceived slights to their weak self-worth, such as dinner not being served on time, may throw them into an uncontrollable rage. Trump's first wife, Ivana, accused him of raping her in sworn deposition testimony, an accusation she later softened as a part of a lucrative divorce settlement, but did not completely retract. This alleged violence fits with the personality of someone fearful of rejection and living with elevated anxiety who might be triggered into violent rage. Abusers can escalate to murder, suicide when a relationship is ending and they must face the humiliation of undeniable rejection. That some abusers will kill others or even themselves to avoid experiencing this emotion shows the power of shame. This pattern of escalating instability is concerning when considering Trump. As the pressures of governing and of the investigations, such as that of alleged collusion with Russia, increase, he may be overwhelmed by fear, which will further limit his cognitive and pro-social capabilities. His behaviors may become increasingly volatile and unpredictable. Healthy relationships require partners who are calm, thoughtful, and deliberate, not fearful and reactive. Fear-driven behaviors and a lack of insight are exactly the opposite of what we should expect of a safe, dependable partner or a leader. Lack of accountability. With shame and fear as the primary emotions driving other blamers, a lack of accountability becomes their most obvious and destructive character flaw. They have difficulty being introspective and acknowledging the effect of their behavior. This would involve gaining insight, admitting fault, and demonstrating remorse, actions that other blamers find devastatingly humiliating. In therapy, I get the sense that an other blamer wants to put his hands to his ears and sing "la la la" in an attempt to avoid hearing the truth. Other blamers do not like to be held accountable because they do not hold themselves accountable. In general, other blamers do not believe they must play by the same societal or relational norms as others, which can be disorienting to partners. Trump's refusal to release his tax returns or comply with ethics regulations is clear evidence of this thought process. Lack of accountability causes escalating arguments in couples because other blamers stubbornly refuse to admit fault, even if the facts are staring them squarely in the face. Or they admit fault reluctantly, but only after much lying and excuse-making. The betrayals of trust mount up, driving a wedge into the relationship. During arguments, other blamers frantically attempt to manage shame by shifting blame, making excuses, or denying behavior. One wife said about her emotionally abusive husband, "During conversations, he is not really listening because he is trying to figure out how to make it not his problem." Domestic abusers are notorious for their lack of accountability. They can go to extremes of rationalization. One abuser noted that while he had locked his wife in the closet for hours, thrown her to the floor repeatedly, and pointed a gun at her head, he had not punched her. As if this arbitrary demarcation excused his inexcusable crimes. The other blamer routinely blames the victim, as if a late dinner were worth a slap in the face. Unlike Harry Truman, who placed a sign on his Oval Office desk stating, "The buck stops here," Trump appears to be completely lacking in accountability. He regularly shifts blame to others and never seems to apologize for any of his lies or mistakes. Trump's blame shifting is so predictable that he can barely make one statement without a deflection. His assertion, although false, that he does not settle lawsuits is an example of his distaste for being held responsible. Trump's tendency to ridicule facts or the opinions of others is another way of avoiding dealing with a situation honestly. Because of their lack of accountability and resulting lack of insight, other blamers are highly resistant to change, leaving their partners with limited power to affect the relationship. In an interpersonal relationship, the partner can leave. Yet, as a country, we have little recourse other than faith that our democratic institutions will keep Trump in check. Unfortunately, abusers and authoritarians such as Trump do not like laws, which are ultimately about holding people accountable. This worldview is a danger to a democracy founded on the rule of law. In contrast, emotionally mature people can accept the boundaries others establish. When they violate expectations, they can apologize promptly and gracefully, which resolves arguments and repairs relationships. Healthy relationships require awareness of one's faults, care for one's impact on others, and an ability to handle mistakes, defeats, and criticism with equanimity. Lack of pro-social emotions. An other blamer's inability to apologize clearly signals to others a lack of conscience and empathy. Compassion, kindness, and altruism are pro-social traits and moral behaviors that are largely innate. Yet, those described as sociopaths and narcissists are often noted for their lack of remorse, guilt, or empathy. Other blamers lack these emotional traits for several reasons. Some did not experience warm interactions in early attachment relationships with caregivers. Perhaps they learned to be hurtful toward others through experiencing or witnessing abuse. Being raised in an environment of trauma increases one's reliance on the survival responses of fight or flight and decreases access to tend and befriend responses, making one less inclined to aid others or even be aware of the needs of others. When in distress or cornered, people often lash out, especially if they have a model of relationships that may not include safety, comfort, or love. An abuser's violent rage is an extreme version of a fear-based deficit in pro-social sentiment. An abuser may say he loves his partner and claim he would never hurt her, but his emotionally reactive behaviors speak the truth, that, when dysregulated by fear and shame, he can care only about himself. For other blamers, it is their emotional struggle to protect their fragile self-image from shame that makes them lack consideration. Other blamers become overwhelmed by their own emotional pain, so they prefer offloading it onto another, even if that means harming that person or the relationship. Even those with less severe other blaming traits end up damaging relationships because they lack an ability to attend or respond to their partner's emotions with kindness and caring. The resulting lack of emotional connection is a major reason relationships fail. In couples therapy, it is difficult to get an other blamer to pay attention to his effect on his partner. Even if his wife is crying, the other blaming husband may sit there unmoved, or, worse yet, argumentative and defensive. He is so busy protecting himself from experiencing shame and blame that he has little capacity to be warmly responsive. Certainly, abusers are harming the relationship every time they react violently. Other blamers often have difficulty attuning to the emotional status of others because, as one other blamer admitted in a rare moment of self-awareness, "I care more about being right than doing the right thing for the relationship." And this is exactly what is happening in Trump's relationship with America. He cares far more about sheltering his fragile psyche than doing what is right for the country. Trump's lack of empathy has been on display for decades, with well-documented bigotry, greed, name-calling, intimidation, and vindictiveness. Because he is in emotional survival mode, Trump fails to notice that his ranting press conferences or bullying tweets are destabilizing. His goal is merely to lash out so he can feel better about himself in that moment. Trump has no concern that his divisive hate speech leads many to fear for their safety and liberty. He is unconcerned about the long-term effect on the country. He is too busy being right at any cost to notice that his lies and accusations are damaging his relationship with the citizens he is leading. Trump has no apparent moral urge to care for others or serve his constituents. He may cite America First slogans, but he has no real understanding of the selfless giving in true patriotism. Trump got 5 deferments during the Vietnam War, yet he has repeatedly verbally attacked war heroes. His policies emphasize cruelty toward the less fortunate and an abdication of caring stewardship of the Earth's resources. As is the case with most other blamers, the country is learning quite clearly that Trump is in it only for himself. The pervasive sense that an other blamer does not care about you is a betrayal and leads, rightfully, to distrust and disconnection. This type of behavior violates our primal need for mutuality and trust in relationships and is why relationships with narcissists are toxic and usually end poorly. Depersonalizing the victim. A lack of emotional attunement and pro-social responsiveness leads to an objectification or depersonalization of others. This distancing is an adaptive mechanism that allows other blamers to experience less guilt when they harm their partners. An abusive man has to bury his compassion in a deep hole in order to escape the profound inherent aversion that human beings have to seeing others suffer. He has to adhere tightly to his excuses and rationalizations, develop a disturbing ability to insulate himself from the pain he is causing, and learn to enjoy power and control over his female partners. Trump, for decades, has made demeaning comments about women's looks and has bragged on videotape about sexually assaulting women. During the campaign, he mocked a disabled reporter. When most pundits said Trump's behavior might improve in the White House, I predicted that his behavior would get worse. His extreme depersonalization of others will worsen as his entitlement increases with the power of his position. Objectification is a critical reason why an abuser tends to get worse over time. As his conscience adapts to one level of cruelty or violence, he builds to the next. By depersonalizing his victim, the abuser protects himself from the natural human emotions of guilt and empathy so that he can sleep at night with a clear conscience. He distances himself so far from her humanity that her feelings no longer count or simply cease to exist. It is frightening to consider that we have a president who may have lost the ability to care about the human lives he is charged with protecting. Entitlement. Other blamers exhibit entitlement, which is closely linked to depersonalization and a lack of accountability. Trump seems to believe he is above reproach, once stating that he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and not lose any voters. Most abusers try to hide socially unacceptable traits. They are often polite to others but abusive to a partner. Sadly, Trump makes no effort to mask his verbal abuse. He feels entitled to publicly shame and demean. Name-calling with comments of loser and lock her up were a staple of his campaign. He appears unrestrained by any sense of moral propriety, which indicates a very dangerous, extreme abuser who does not even attempt to plaster over his ill will with a sociopath's charm. He cannot even pretend to be good-natured, despite all his popularity, wealth, and power. Deception. Other blamers lie to exaggerate achievements in an attempt to seek approval, deflect blame, and avoid accountability. They become adept at outright deception, lies of omission, twisted responses, denial, and subject changing. Lying to others is second nature to other blamers because they lie to themselves constantly. To routinely shift blame to others is a massive, lifelong effort at self-deception. Other blamers lie by rationalizing, convincing themselves that their behavior is appropriate, with the goal of avoiding hearing the truth and experiencing shame. Author Tony Schwartz has said about Trump that lying is second nature to him. More than anyone else I have ever met, Trump has the ability to convince himself that whatever he is saying at any given moment is true, or sort of true, or at least ought to be true. Other blamers and abusers lie so frequently that their partners often do not know what to believe. How can a relationship of any kind withstand the betrayal of a constant barrage of deception, excuses, and denials? Humans have a survival-oriented need for trust in relationships. Can I really count on you when it matters? Do you have my back? With repeated lies, interpersonal partners and national allies will learn that the answer is no. This is exactly what is causing distress for many Americans since Trump's election. They sense, correctly, that he will impulsively betray us to achieve his aims, even if it is not in the best interest of the country. Representative Adam Schiff, a Democrat from California, noted that Trump's constant lies may lead to a loss of trust in a leader's words that may have major international implications. When a president of the U.S. makes claims that are proved baseless, it weakens the presidency and undermines our security and standing in the world. Presidential credibility, once squandered, may never be fully regained. If the president may one day assert that North Korea has placed a nuclear weapon on a ballistic missile and action is necessary, it will be an enormous problem if untrue. If true, it may be an even bigger problem if the president has lost the capacity to persuade our allies of the facts, let alone the American people. Other characteristics of abusive other blamers include placing high value on personal loyalty, surrounding themselves with yes-men. Trump relies almost exclusively on family members as advisors, even though none has government experience. Isolating their partners and often convincing their victims that others do not have their best interests at heart. Throughout the campaign, Trump created an us-versus-them mentality in his followers, belittling anyone who might weaken his hold on those followers' hearts and minds. Being attracted to power and tending to misuse it. They use an authoritarian style of speaking that gets others to doubt reality. Trump boldly repeats lies so that the truth has little opportunity to flourish. Promoting an image of success. Trump's gold-plated lifestyle and obsession with crowd sizes and vote counts provide ample evidence that protecting his delicate ego takes precedence. Driven to distraction, Trump's effect on our psychological health. A fundamental problem with a Trump presidency is not merely that his poorly thought-out policies may harm us. It is that his character defects will normalize immoral other-blaming behaviors and encourage their full expression among those who may have previously been held in check by expectations of socially acceptable behavior. If the recent uptick in racial violence is an indicator, Trump has given his followers a green light to act out. Just as the trauma of witnessing domestic violence damages children, an emotionally immature president can affect the future of our nation regarding moral behavior, cultural stability, and psychological wellness. Other blamers can be restrained only by prompt, calm boundary setting and an enforcement of moral and social norms. Without these influences, other blamers grow in boldness and their presumption of power. Other blamers will take as much ground as they can get. We must resist, not only to contain Trump's behaviors, but also to signal to his followers that abusive behavior is not appropriate. Unfortunately, now that millions of other blamers have been encouraged by Trump to misbehave, it may be impossible to get that genie back in the bottle. In therapy, it is common to see families where a narcissist or a sociopath has not been held in check, sometimes multiple generations of them, and the resulting dysfunction creates ripples of psychological trauma, including insecure attachment patterns in children, addictions, estrangement, and conflict. Because the other blamer refuses to compromise or engage in fair play, it becomes every man for himself. Family members resent having to always give so the other blamer can take. They resent the other blamer lying and refusing to agree on facts. They resent always being blamed, while the other blamer can never admit fault. Abuse victims often experience frustration because when they try to get through to the abuser, the rules of fair play do not apply. As a country, we are attempting to apply democratic rule of law to Trump. If Trump refuses to play by the rules and the courts and Congress do not hold him accountable, we citizens have little recourse, which will cause us to have the sense of helpless desperation of an abused spouse. Compromise and reciprocity are key parts of politics and healthy relationships. Other blamers are inclined to adopt an attitude of my way or the highway, as Trump did with his ham-handed rushing through of a replacement for the Affordable Care Act without debate. If Trump has to be right and win at all costs, and if he views discussion and compromise as losing, this offers little hope for the future of the country's relationship with him. It is common for a jealous spouse to angrily text his wife 30 times a day, call repeatedly, and argue for hours. The effort it takes to manage the abuser causes the partner to have less time and energy for parenting, career, or self-care. In narcissistic relationships, one has little left over after the arguments. Abused partners tend to overfocus on the relationship rather than address their own self-improvement until the relationship is ended. In the same way, since the 2016 election, much of the world has been in a panic, overfocused on Trump and unable to deal with much else but his foibles and follies. The world is scrambling to respond to chaos, which leaves little energy to address legitimate issues. When the Japanese Prime Minister visited, the discussion about Trump's bizarrely aggressive handshaking style overtook talk of trade deals or North Korea. Antarctic ice shelf breaking off? Wars? Refugees? The European Union in turmoil? These issues receive inadequate attention because the world is trying to make sense of the attention-seeking distraction in the White House. This is potentially tragic for those people and issues ignored as a result of the dysfunctional relationship we have with this president. I am experiencing this personally, as I spend much more time reading news articles, organizing rallies, writing letters, and making phone calls. This is time and energy I could be spending championing world causes. In fact, here I am writing about Trump's mental health when, with a different person in office, I could be working to improve the mental health care system. This narcissistic president is doing what all narcissists do, sucking the air out of the room. When in relationship with an other blamer, one must spend one's time and energy arguing about the arguing, rather than living peacefully and productively. Trump will continue to have a toxic effect at the individual and global level, not just through his harmful, ill-considered policy decisions, but through increased anxiety and the diversion of attention from other issues. A true leader or a caring spouse manages his or her behaviors and emotions in a mature, temperate way. The country will have less ability to focus on solutions to complex problems until we get rid of the other blamer-in-chief we are in relationship with. The coarsening of society and the loss of civility and empathy will likely be irreparable in the near term. We can only hope that we break up with this abusive president before he breaks up the country. Harper West, www.harperwest.co, MA, LLP, is a licensed psychotherapist in Clarkston, Michigan. She graduated from Michigan State University with a degree in journalism and worked in corporate communications, later earning a master's degree in clinical psychology from the Michigan School of Professional Psychology. Ms. West is the developer of self-acceptance psychology, which challenges the biological model of mental disorders and offers a new paradigm that reframes emotional problems as adaptive responses to fear, trauma, shame, and lack of secure attachment. Her self-help book, Pack Leader Psychology, won an Independent Book Publishers Association Ben Franklin Award for Psychology.
Birtherism and the Deployment of the Trumpian Mindset by Luba Kessler, MD. Donald Trump straddles the country's divide between those who cheer his ascendance to the presidency and those who are greatly disturbed by it. This intensely felt division points to the highly emotional effect he has on the nation. What is it? People have cited a variety of factors. This chapter offers a singular look at Trump's method of political insinuation through an examination of his embrace and loud propagation of the birtherism conspiracy. His use of it as a jumping-off platform to launch his presidential candidacy showed from the start the unmistakable signs of an unabashed bending of reality and the deployment of demagoguery to achieve his political aims. What is birtherism? Since 2011, Donald Trump was the loudest and most persistent spokesperson for the conspiracy theory that Barack Obama was not a native U.S. citizen. In denying that Obama was a naturally born American, Trump joined the birtherism argument espoused by the national far-right political fringe. It was Trump's first visible political falsehood, initiating a perversion of the political discourse that ultimately led to his election. A false covenant with the public followed, spawning a multitude of other alternative realities. This brings up disturbing questions. Why did this falsehood take root? And what are the ramifications of a presidency based on it? This chapter attempts to consider this question in light of recent history. The first decade of the country's political history in the 21st century saw two profoundly transformative national events. America suffered the first and only foreign attack on its mainland since the War of 1812 on September 11, 2001. And in 2008, it elected a black man as its president and re-elected him for a second term in 2012. One event came from the outside, the other from developments inside the country. Is there something about this convergence between the shock of the one and the internal ripples of the other? Let us examine. The 9/11 terrorist attacks shook the country's sense of invincibility. Ever since then, the United States has been at war in foreign lands in an effort to recover its sense of security and prowess. Our nation has always been proud of its sovereignty, its expansive manifest destiny at home, and its voice of authority abroad. The adjustment of its post-9/11 self-image on the national and international stage has been painful. We entered the new millennium with a great deal of self-questioning. American millennials came face to face with ethnic and religious otherness with an urgency unknown to previous generations. On the one hand, it widened their horizons, fueling greater interest in and openness to the world. Yet, on the other hand, life became more unsettled. The breakdown in the social and family sense of security made their entrance into this new world more susceptible to feelings of mistrust and fearfulness. The impulse to circle the wagons and turn inward encouraged suspicion of others. Xenophobia. The election of Barack Obama as the U.S. president also represented a great shift in the nation's life and psychology, though of a different nature. Blacks have historically carried connotations of otherness in America by the difference of their skin color and the circumstances of their arrival on the continent compared to the majority population, which has led to persistent racism. Certainly, the election of an African-American man to the highest office in the land represented a dramatic civic achievement in the country's history. It gave cause to consider the possibility that the United States may have reached a post-racial consciousness. Yet, the production of the birtherism movement in this historical context, tells a different story. How so? The questioning of the authenticity of Barack Obama's native birth is without precedent in the history of the American presidency. No other president, all of whom were white, was ever subjected to the deep offense of such a cruel falsehood. It was as if such an arrogant affront to the dignity of the president or any man was permissible because he was black. With such calumny, Donald Trump signaled thinly veiled bigotry. While not expressing directly an outright racist slur, his embrace of birtherism was a dog whistle, an unmistakable call to delegitimize a black American citizen as the other because he aspired to the presidency of the nation. The American public takes great pride in the fact that any of its native-born could become president. It has always been the aspirational ideal of this country's self-image as a place of freedom and opportunity for all. Both Barack Obama, an African-American professor of constitutional law with a record of community service and the audacity of hope, and Donald Trump, a brash real estate developer with no political experience, could succeed in the quest for the highest office in the land on the strength of their appeal to the citizenry. The bigotry of birtherism set a limit on this national aspiration. It signaled that a black person could not be truly American. Just as the election of Barack Obama thrilled the nation, imbuing us with civic pride in the seeming achievement of a post-racial society, birtherism signaled that it was permissible for America, deep in its soul, to continue harboring and nursing the historic racial prejudice. It said that a black president could not be legitimate, and so the factual reality of his very birth on American soil had to be denied. In this willful distortion of fact, Donald Trump showed the essential quality of his personality, the perversion of his relationship to truth. It showed that he could and would distort and deform the truth in his quest to secure any deal he was after. Truth and reality were commodities, just like any other, a matter for a transactional sale of a desired acquisition. This appears to be the hallmark of the Trumpian mindset. Birtherism was its opening political bid. We are living in a time of great demographic, economic, social, and political transformation at home and abroad. What it means is that the pressures from outside the national realm resonate with those within it. America's unrivaled democratic diversity, as seen in its immigrant descendants, continues to evolve, just as its standing in the global transformation is adjusting anew to evolving realities, global terrorism among them. This stretches the psychological resources of the nation and its resilience. The American citizenry meets its moment of truth under conditions of shaken security and changing identity. It becomes a matter of paramount importance to the well-being of the country, therefore, that it withstand and manage these pressures with a calm resolve based on the moral sense of decency and reason. At such times, the nation looks to its leader to uphold its vital interests and values. It is for this reason that we celebrate those presidents who showed the capacity to meet the challenging realities of their moment in history with dignity, an appeal to what Abraham Lincoln called the better angels of our nature. This is the reason that Lincoln stands in the American presidential pantheon with George Washington and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Each of these men lifted the nation not with partisan transaction, but with vision and moral purpose. Donald Trump's appeal has just the opposite effect. It debases civic discourse and corrodes national unity. Birtherism shows the essential characteristics of Donald Trump's mindset. A self-professed ultimate dealmaker first and foremost, he pursued the presidency in an entirely transactional manner. he did not hesitate to make up falsehoods or wink at bigotry to win. In a manner similar to exploiting every available tax loophole, every feasible advantage over his debtors, contractors, and workers, every opportunity to have special relationships in order to advance his deal-making aims, he made an unerring political calculation to seize the transitional moment of national insecurity. His business acumen worked brilliantly against all odds, but his transactional win represents a profound danger to the nation because it sells out the most essential qualities of democratic values, of moral integrity, and of true inventiveness. What binds us together is the shared reality of our country's history and its present. E pluribus unum. Out of many, one. The country's cherished motto cannot hold when truth is open to transactional competition from alternative facts. We are left with the question about what made the American public receptive to Donald Trump's promissory bid despite his falsehoods. Yes, our country is ever open to enterprising inventiveness and grand boldness, but it is not naive. There has been too much toil, hardship, and strong civic pride in building this nation for its citizenry to surrender the habits of common sense and clear-headed pragmatism. However, this does not make America immune to the lingering effects of its own historical legacy of slavery and racism. Without a full reconciliation between that legacy and the nation's founding ideals, the significant fault line between the two will open up in times of increased strain. The startling fabrication of the birtherism movement offers a window into just such a fault line. It does not require particular professional schooling to recognize that birtherism was a telltale sign of a preoccupation with otherness. It is easy to grasp the sense of threat from the foreign other in the age of terrorism and massive global migration. It is more difficult to acknowledge the persistent fear and lingering mistrust of the black other at home in America. We want to believe in our post-racial integration and equality. We are proud of the progress we have made. The election of Barack Obama is its rightful proof. It is a lot more difficult to recognize the prejudices of an inborn and ingrown kind of stereotyping. The fact that Donald Trump could successfully use the myth of birtherism as an under-the-radar deployment of bigotry attests to its subterranean persistence. This is not an indictment of American society. It is a call for recognition of America's historical conditions. We associate the settling of the country with white colonists. We grow up with those lessons of our history and culture. Although the labor of the blacks was indispensable to the fledgling American economy, slavery denied them the recognition and rights of equal participation. The result was persistent discrimination, which further disenfranchised them from full civic participation, with each perpetuating the other. White and black cultural traditions came to develop their own idioms, furthering the racial divide. It is beyond the scope of this chapter to consider the myriad ways in which racism continues to plague our national realities. It remains our challenge to write the political, civic, and interpersonal relations needed for the mutual benefit of the present and future American generations, white, black, and any other. In order to rise to the challenge, we need the courage of truth and awareness. We need to question rationalized public policies that maintain segregation and inequality, be it at the voting booth or in judicial or police protection. We need to tune into and question habits of prejudice and bigotry. We need to probe better the stereotypes of our culture and of ourselves. Such an examination will inoculate our civic consciousness against the lies masquerading as truth. We will choose worthy leaders aware of their responsibility to represent the integrity of the nation's essential values. Birtherism shows Donald Trump not only as unworthy, but as dangerous to the nation's central tenet, e pluribus unum. It is not negotiable.
Luba Kessler, M.D., is a psychiatrist and psychoanalyst in private practice. Born in the post-Holocaust displacement in the Ural Mountains, she has lived and received her education in the Soviet Union, Poland, Italy, and the United States. That journey included essential lessons in history, geography, culture, art, and politics. Postgraduate training and faculty appointments followed in psychiatry at Hillside Hospital on Long Island and in psychoanalysis at NYU Psychoanalytic Institute, now the Institute for Psychoanalytic Education, affiliated with NYU Medical School. She is editor of Issues in Education for the American Psychoanalyst of the American Psychoanalytic Association.
Trump's Daddy Issues. A Toxic Mix for America. Steve Rubel, M.D. As a psychiatrist, I am interested in why people are the way they are. Ultimately, the more I understand others and my relationship to them, the better I understand myself. I am intrigued by the factors that have guided Donald Trump into the Oval Office and into the hearts, minds, and clenched fists of so many Americans. I'm especially frustrated by his having captured the attention and respect of the man I have always craved a closer relationship with, my father. Fathers and sons have a storied history of playing off each other as they grapple with their evolving separate and shared identities. We tumble through time doing our best to make sense of all that we witness and experience. I, like Donald Trump, grew up watching and interacting with a strong, proud, and successful father. We both looked up to our fathers for guidance, but at the same time, we also felt a certain competitiveness with them as we fought for our innate need for separation and individuation. The spectrum of how sons interact with their fathers is vast. The early beliefs that each has about himself will determine the path chosen to act out their drama. As much as I am disturbed by Trump's behavior, I can't help but wonder what of him is in me, and vice versa. Who is this man who has captivated so much of the American electorate, and for that matter, the whole world? As a son locked into a drama with a father, can I shed light on that question? Politically, many people in America are single-issue voters. Whether it be abortion, the economy, or foreign policy, it's that one main issue that holds sway over their vote. In my family's case, that one issue is Israel. I come from a family of modern Orthodox Jews, and Orthodox Jewry as a group has thrown its support behind President Trump because it feels Israel will be safer under his watch. Of course, other issues are also important to Orthodox Jews, but these are usually overshadowed by concern for Israel. About 10 years ago, I made the difficult decision to let my family know that I had stopped following the many dictates that an Orthodox Jew is expected to follow. This new choice was quite freeing for me, since I had already been living this way secretly for a few years. At the same time, it was upsetting to my parents, and especially my father, because Judaism is a major part of his identity. He said he was worried that this would create chaos in our family and wished, for my children's sake, that I would keep my secret to myself. On a deeper level, it felt as if he perceived it as a threat to his leadership in the family. My decision to leave Orthodox Judaism feels connected to the evolution of my political views toward a more liberal agenda. This, at first, was uncomfortable because it was frowned upon in my community to question anything that supported the State of Israel. Donald Trump's behavior was clear and disturbing to me and overshadowed his support for Israel. However, my misgivings were not echoed in my community. My attempts to be understood by family and friends were surprisingly difficult. Many Republicans seem to be locked in a dysfunctional relationship with Trump as a strong father figure who appears to have far less to offer than they're pining for. Yet, like myself, they are looking to their father in the hope that he will deliver them from what feels broken within them and the lives they are leading. Before addressing the difficulties in my family around what it's like to see the political world so differently and yet to continue to share family events and happy occasions, I'd like to take a short drive through Donald Trump's life to show you some things that help make sense of what we're all witnessing. There are several details that seem to shine a light on how Trump's relationship with his father, Fred Trump, may have impacted his development. Donald is the fourth of five children. His oldest sister is a circuit court judge, and his oldest brother, Freddie Jr., died at the age of 43 from complications due to alcoholism. According to a New York Times article, Horowitz, 2016, it was apparent to those who watched Fred Trump with his children that his intensity was